some discussion over a period of a year or so about doing a history of the early years of Stony Brook. The reason being that it started from scratch, and inside of 30 years, 25 years on the Stony Brook campus, it has become a well-recognized university nationally, particularly in the sciences, but also in some of the other fields. And in talking about the possibility, it became clear that some of the sources, some of the people who were instrumental in creating and developing Stony Brook were no longer living. And so I was asked if I would be willing to do some interviewing of some of the key individuals. And I said I would, although I'm working on the field of valuation myself. But this is important, to get these recollections and these judgments down as to who and why and how, as well as what, where, and when. Let me see if that's coming me up.
Housing Corporation. because I had happened to draw a concrete house that both Nelson and Harrison thought would be a great salvation for low-cost housing. Mm-hmm. Another whole story. But that brought me close and more into planning and that type of thing. And when, I'm trying to make this brief, when he went to Albany as governor, he asked Harrison to ask if I would go up there and to set up a chart room for him. I had run a chart room in Washington for Rockefeller, maps and charts, and I had a whole system where we could put them all up for any given meeting, any subject, because he liked graphic material much more than any textual material because of his dyslexia. And so that was the relationship between myself and the governor. It was from that background. When I went on the plane on the way up with him from Westchester, he kept pointing out different things that he was getting into as a newly elected governor. And quite a bit of word, the state institutions here and there that we happened to see in the Hudson Valley on the way up, and his knowledge already that some of the highways that were being planned didn't coordinate properly with the institutions for access and so forth, and other kinds of things of that kind. By the time I got up there, I said, well, I think what you were talking about is a need for a planning office, whatever form it would take, rather than, and the tool of the chat room type of thing, which I'd be very glad to help you with. We began to talk further on that, and as a result, the outgrowth of that was the creation of his apparatus for state planning overall. That was a planning coordination board made up of the heads of the agencies most responsible for construction in the state. The Commissioner of Public Works, of course, the Commissioner of Health because of the hospitals, Commissioner of Education in relation to the schools and things of this kind.
That was Alan?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he made me secretary of that. Keith McHugh was the... he was the chairman of this. He was the Commissioner of Commerce. Oh. And Nelson put him as commissioner, as chairman of this Office for Regional Development. For the Planning Coordination Board. Now, the staff arm of that was we call the Office for Regional Development. Nelson and I and others agreed that nobody seemed to like the word planning at that point so much as development. And I also, I think, was responsible for trying to do it on a regional basis, not really on a statewide basis, so much as a coordination of regional efforts by the state. This was in place and getting started when another thread of his program at that point, which had come, incidentally, his whole program, to my mind, had come from the commission, the Constitutional Commission, which he headed up before he was elected governor. There was a New York State Constitution Commission. In fact, that's where he used Bill Roman the first time, who became his executive secretary, as you know, as governor. Another thread was the analysis, the realization that there was a surge in population, so-called war baby population surge, which during the 50s had come up along into secondary school, and everybody was rushing around building schools and high schools, and they were all anticipating that this was coming into the college level. Now, this was certainly the big basis for all that I thought about the construction fund that followed.
Right. Now, just hold it just a minute. I want to make sure that I'm getting it.
Sure.
Okay.
Right, go ahead. Now, he had also begun early in his governorship, first 2 weeks, an analysis of state construction as a whole and the way it worked its way slowly through the Public Works Department or through any of the agencies and through the Budget Division and so forth. And he had Harrison head up a three-man committee on that with Lou Crandall, who is the head of the George A. Fuller Company Construction, Boyd Anderson, a top engineer from Almond and Whitney in New York, and Harrison. And Harrison used me on that as well as a kind of a secretary. We analyzed the fact that any state projects, including, incidentally, those that they were building for these portions of the state university here and there, would go through the public works. An architect would be chosen, he'd make schematic plans, and he'd never see his plans again until dedication day. And then sometimes he began to cry.
Yeah.
But it would go through public works, they would send it over to budget for approval. Budget had its own architects at that time within the budget division, and they could change the plan. And they did. And then it would go to the state university, and they had their own architect. Actually, Elwin Stevens, who you speak about, was in that position at that point. And we found that there were something like 17 approval points of approvals and change before the thing, you got to go ahead for whatever stage it was in, whether it was just approval of contract for construction or something like that. Whereas he knew that he could take this out of that complete agency bureaucracy and give it a semi-independent situation. Now, he had tried that initially with the dormitory authority, and it created the pattern of a separate quasi-public agent, state agency, ability to issue its own bonds, and on the basis of that, ability to control its own design and construction phase with such reasonable relationship to the state university and to budget as would be still permitted to move ahead without going through the whole public works thing particularly, and without going through certain other checks and balances, whatever you would call them. So those two things came together when he began to draw up plans for how to handle the state university construction. Now, Rockefeller always saw, to my mind, any such program of activity as being one form of leverage for comprehensive development activity. In other words, it would tie in with other things. If you had some campuses, and initially he didn't know what it amounted to on this plan, and he was building a campus here and there. At the same time, the parks department was helping on getting some parks arranged, but later on we came into the Pure Waters Authority, of which I was chairman, incidentally, and that was where taking care of the pollution and sewage and garbage and so on, where it would create a plant, and then you might have a park with the remaining land. This might be put in the right place to service the state university campus, which is near wherever that was. And in the meantime, the highway department would have developed proper access, knowing what the plans were for the other agencies and so on. So he had began to have drafted the legislation for the state university construction fund. The university, you well know, has been brought together by the Heald Commission following Mitchell.
Did he appoint the Heald Commission? Or had it auto? Did Harriman?
No, that was earlier. That was Harriman, I think, yes. And that was before Nelson really got into the picture. So he began to have this drawn up. I, in the meantime, had built up the Office for Regional Development to service the Planning Coordination Board. Now, one thing mechanism he used at this point was very early on, he began his regional visits to study the activity and to work with the local people in terms of regional, one region at a time. One was Nassau and Suffolk County, I remember. And we would prepare for those in the Office for Regional Development, including looking at all the different state activities, including the state university, such as it was at that point, wherever bits and pieces were already in place, which had been assembled under the Heald Commission. Okay. And we'd go out and visit with them, and he would take various of the state officials out with him, sometimes the large part of his cabinet, and then we'd end up with a town hall meeting for open discussion and so forth. So, and I was helping to organize those things. Now, when he got to the point of implementing the legislation for the State University Construction Fund, that provided for three trustees, and we were sworn in at 54th Street, his office, New York office. I remember well, Carolyn Simon was the one that Secretary of State swore us in. That was the first time I had seen that she always took her shoes off as she came up with the Bible for you to put your hand on and be sworn in. And I asked her later, she said, well, I'm taller than Nelson, and that wouldn't look well in the photographs, you see. He took the three of us, Cliff Phelan and Jim Gingrich. Clifford Phelan was the president at that time of the New York State Telephone Company. And Jim Gaynor was the head of the State Housing Authority. Now, the State Housing Finance Agency, I think it was called. And that was the vehicle which had been used to handle the issuance of the Dormitory Authority bonds. That already had begun, you see.
That mechanism was in place.
Just getting started, really. I'm not sure if they even had a bond issue, but it was. I think they had one, and that was the prototype for what had happened in several cases after that. Right after the swearing-in, Nelson took us into his own office and said, now, let me tell you, first, there are only three trustees. He said, we did it that way, so if any one of you makes a motion, and the other one seconds the motion, why, you don't have to take a vote. Sorry, now you have a majority. And he said, that'll facilitate it. Now, Cliff Phelan, I want you to get this job done. We know what the job is. There's been the projections of this enrollment, how the State University had its own program pretty well developed as to how each campus had to be expanded. As far as I recall, anyway, they already had the pattern for the four major campuses, university campuses, so the upstate and downstate medical is the other big things, Buffalo and Brooklyn, and for how the other would grow. There was a program already developed, I think.
I think they'd come to the decision that one single Central State University was not feasible in the Illinois and Ohio.
In Michigan and so forth, yeah.
What report that was, I don't know whether it was Leiden or some other, or Blaney, but anyway, I'll get that.
Right.
But Stony Brook was to be one of the four.
As I recall it, when we were at the time our unit was founded and we were sworn in, the state already had in place a program for the development of all these different campuses, and the decision, I had the impression, in retrospect anyway, that the decision on the dispersed campuses and putting them statewide had been taken. I thought it went back to the Heald Commission.
Stony Brook is mentioned in the Heald specifically in the Heald Commission report. So that I think that planning had existed even before the Heald Commission's.
I think it might well have. So they confirmed the decision for dispersed.
Right. And there was no change in that.
Right. Now, to finish with that little introduction, Nelson said, Cliff, I want you to get this job done. And Jim, I want you to get it financed. And George, I want you to be in charge to getting a good design and planning and to create the physical environment that we want on these campuses. And I want the three of you to know that those are the three things that need to be done, and those are your responsibilities. And I'll go ahead and do it. Well, I was quite a bit the younger of the three, And I was there partly because Harrison was so strongly respected by Nelson, but Nelson had also apparently respected what I'd been doing for him over the previous 15 years. He also knew that in my capacity as Director of the Regional Development and Secretary of the Planning Coordination Board, I could take these campuses, you see, as a vital and very significant in scope and scale part of each of these regional development activities, and that I could back up, or our program that way, could back up the coordination of the development of any one of the campuses with local planning and with state planning. Now,
that's coordination of site planning
with what was going on around and so on.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, what we did, as we jumped right into this, after that, was we began the series of visits out to the campus. One I remember so well was when we went to Geneseo, and much smaller scale than Stony Brook situation, but so clear, because I'd gone out earlier, I'd gone out with one of the state university people.
Jarvie? Was it Jarvie?
Out there, you mean?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But we had asked that they assemble some of the state university people from the campus, whoever's responsible for city planning in the little town of Geneseo, town planning. We got the regional highway engineer for the area and so forth. We got everybody that we thought had a position to play. And we sat down around the table, and I spoke from the position of having been responsible for this from a state university construction point of view, as I've just outlined briefly, and from the Office of Regional Development and Agency Coordination, I could speak to the highwayman and say, now we want to work with the local regional people, and we're working with the state university. Now this is all tied together, and the way we're going to do it is we're going to select architects who have the capacity for planning, because any one of these campuses, even the smaller ones, need to be related to the fabric of development and planning around them. And they'll be growing, they can't overwhelm the city or town, we want it to be a mutual thing. And we're going to select these, and they're going to be architects who have a planning capacity in that firm. Or where we know that there's an architect planner team that's worked successfully together earlier. And we're going to also give these architects who do the planning, the architect planners who do the planning, the first chief buildings that are coming on for the construction, because we want them to feel responsible. So often you get planners who plan and give that to the community or the institution or the agency, whatever, and then along come some architects, and it doesn't work out too well, and the architects say, oh, well, it's hard because the plan, look, that wasn't very good. And on the other hand, the planners say, well, the architects didn't do what we had intended in the first place. So we put it together that way. That was the reason for that, which came up frequently in the discussions with architects and also with the local political people, you see, because they had been in the habit of recommending an architect from their community to do a job. They recommend him to appointment by the Public Works through a political way, and the Public Works would accept him, appoint him to do schematics, as I told you, and then that's all you'd have the right to do. And pretty soon the building would go grinding through the bureaucracy at that point, you see. So I said we were going to bring them in, and they were going to take the lead in what would be a coordinated activity, getting the maximum value out of this thing, which for some communities would be a major change in the structure of their community. Geneseo had a little bit of a main street running for,
I know, I taught there for 7 years.
You know very well. Good. You know the length of Main Street.
Yeah.
At each end there was a fort.
Yeah.
And there was a, what's the name of that family that was the big family?
Oh, it was Wadsworth.
Wadsworth,
yes.
And there was a Wadsworth at one end, and there was a Wadsworth at the other end, and the city couldn't go any further in those directions. Down the hill toward the river was the way the buildings had begun to be placed here and there. Starting with a little one way out at the end of Academy Alley, which is a tiny, where they taught normal school teachers, initially. Now, they got the community to agree to work with them, and they got things so that this would not be, I think at that point, the Geneseo population was something like 2,500
people.
Very small town. And the university was already aiming toward that and was going to go, I think they had a final expansion plan there for 10,000 students, or 8,000, somewhere in that neighborhood. In any case, it was going to grow substantially beyond the city. If they planned with just what they saw around, they would, you know, they could just overwhelm the city and really disrupt its structure and its growth. Planning together, they could do what they, in that case, did. They made the walkways to the street and so on. That was the beginning. That was typical. Now, Stony Brook was a special case.
In what sense?
Well,
had there been any planning of the site by Stevens before you came in?
There had been. The Stony Brook, every one of them was a special case. I shouldn't have said it quite that way, but Stony Brook was an even more special case because it was going to end up being one of the big four. That was one of the challenges of it. Secondly, it had begun in a certain directions in certain ways. I'm not sure the role played by Stevens for the university in detail right at that point and up to that point for the previous few years. As I recall vaguely, and you, I think, just indicated, Stony Brook began in some other quarters.
It began in Oyster Bay.
In Oyster Bay.
On the Coal Estate. About 400 acres there. And Steve told me that there were serious consideration of keeping it there.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently they gave it up, and apparently somehow Ward Melville,
right,
was involved in the early early planning sufficiently to, I think he was chairman of the school board. And he was also on the Suffolk Industrial Commission. And he had the experience of completely revamping the village of Stony Brook.
Stony Brook, right.
And had done a good job.
And restoration.
Yes,
restoration.
It was done a very good job.
Considered.
So I think that he was interested to have an institution nearby,
right,
which he envisaged as a liberal arts college.
Right. Now, he and therefore he gave some land.
Yes, over a period of years, the total gift, I think, was 480 acres.
He gave that land for a new campus there rather than at Oyster Bay.
Okay.
Now, at some point, he had become one of the local, each college had a local
council. Yes.
And he was a member, or he might have been chairman of it, or president.
He was appointed, I think Hammond appointed him as chairman of the local council.
Right. So he had some ability to put his own thoughts about this into action, in addition to giving the land, which would have some legitimate strings tied to it of considerations, or at least he could, in the process of giving the land, make some specification of how it should be. But in addition, he as head of the council, he had a voice in that. Now, it's about this time, this had already happened, this had already happened, and they'd begun with some construction there through the earlier process. There were some dormitories, there was a library, there was an administration building, a classroom building, I think.
Well, when I came, which was September 62,
mm-hmm.
I came the year that we moved from Oyster Bay out to the Stony Brook campus.
The academic year?
Yes, September 1st is the beginning of the academic year 62-63.
Right.
And we had the humanities building, the chemistry building, and one of the dormitory complexes.
Yeah.
They were working on the library. They were working on a biology building. And I noted almost immediately that they had placed the chemistry building and the biology building